This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the U.S. administration and the Trump administration is assisting Tunisia and is cooperating with the Tunisian government. And we need now is a more consistent assistance.
That's Faisal Kouya, the Tunisian ambassador to the U.S., speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. Full details coming up.
Also, Ugandan legislators have passed a constitutional amendment that could allow President Yoweri Museveni to extend his time in office. And the International Monetary Fund says the Republic of Congo must do more to improve governance and make its debt load more sustainable.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the Ugandan parliament has overwhelmingly voted to eliminate presidential age limits, paving the way for one of Africa's longest-serving leaders to rule until 2031. By a vote of 315 to 62, the lawmakers amended the constitution to remove a measure that prevented anyone younger than 35 or older than 75 from holding the presidency. Under the current law, President Yoweri Museveni, 73, would not be eligible to run in the next presidential election in 2021. The bill will become law after Museveni signs it. The new bill does introduce term limits, but they will only come into force after the next election, meaning Museveni could serve two more five-year terms. The president's party, which has a majority in parliament, had argued that the age limit discriminated against the elderly. As if to appease the young, the bill also lowers the age of eligibility for president from 35 to 18. Uganda is the latest of several African countries to amend their constitutions to favor the leadership. At least 10 countries on the continent have dropped term limits, and leaders in more than 20 countries effectively do not face restrictions on their time in power, according to the U.S.-funded African Center for Strategic Studies. Such moves have also fueled violent protest in countries including Burundi, the DRC, and South Sudan. Many Ugandans took to social media to voice their disappointment at the passage of the bill. It is a dark day and a backward move toward disaster, says a political historian at Uganda's Makerere University. He also said, "I don't see anything positive in that."
The International Monetary Fund says the Republic of Congo must do more to improve governance and make its debt load more sustainable. This before the lender will approve a financial support package. After wrapping up a week of talks with Congo officials, IMF mission leader Abdulaziz Wani today said he is encouraged by the government's 2018 budget. He said it would lead to fiscal sustainability while increasing support for vulnerable groups such as women. Wini's statement took note of how low oil prices have hit Congo. That problem has been compounded by unsustainable debt levels and weak governance. Overall, the country has seen a recession this year, with the economy contracting more than 9%. He urged the Brazzaville government to create an independent anti-corruption body and take measures such as requiring senior government officials to declare their assets. The Republic of Congo, like many other oil-rich nations in Africa, has struggled over the past several years after oil prices fell more than 50%.
Seven years ago, a popular uprising in Tunisia sparked the Arab Spring. It spawned democratic uprisings in countries like Egypt, Syria, and Yemen, though only Tunisia had a successful transition. However, the Tunisian revolution stopped short of improving economic opportunities for the young. Faisal Kia is Tunisian ambassador to the U.S. He explained to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi how the Tunisian revolution succeeded and how the U.S. could help the country go forward.
There are actually many factors and many reasons for that. First, our military institution is neutral, is Republican. It was not involved in the uprising, and it just managed to keep its rule to protect the country and to protect the borders. Second, political leadership in Tunisia is strong, is wise, is reasonable, and it led the country to many consensus that helped the country succeed its democratic transition. Third reason is Tunisians maybe are very well prepared to set up a democratic systems because Tunisians are known to be very well educated people. The education system in Tunisia is one of the best in the region. Also, the role of women is crucial, and Tunisian women played a very important role in the transition. Also, the role of the civil society in Tunisia. We have more than 20,000 NGOs, and they represent check and balance power in the country. So any decision that is taken in the country should take into consideration the impact and the effect on the civil society and the public opinion as a whole.
While Tunisia managed to take giant steps toward democratic transition, it stopped short of achieving popular demands, especially economic opportunities. Why?
We should not forget that at a time while we are setting up a democracy, also we are fighting terrorism. And we are facing also a regional environment which is not very appropriate for economic and social development. That's why the economic and social reforms and growth and development was not as quick and as appropriate as possible because, as I said, of the lack of investments in the country. The tourism sector also was affected by the situation in the country and in the region. But we have very positive signals these last months because this government, the coalition government, is performing very well on the economic side. And hopefully the economic growth for 2017 will reach 2.3 or 2.4%, while it used to be no more than 1% in the last few years.
What are the major challenges facing Tunisia 7 years after its revolution?
The first challenge remains security. And second, job creation. We have to watch carefully all these young men and women that are looking for job opportunities. But because of the economic situation in the country, our economy cannot absorb all these numbers and the big number of school graduates, but also those who are asking for jobs. The third major challenge is the economic growth. We are fighting and we are working very hard towards increasing the economic growth by encouraging investments, internal and foreign investments, but also by encouraging Tunisians to invest and to create their own project and startups. One of the reasons of the Tunisian revolution was the lack of balance of development between the inner regions and the regions that are on the shore, and many people feel that they are not treated equally.
How would you describe the U.S. support of the Tunisian democratic transition, and what should the Trump administration do to help achieve a successful transition in Tunisia?
The U.S. administration and the Trump administration is assisting Tunisia and is cooperating with the Tunisian government. And we need now is a more consistent assistance, especially a multi-year assistance program, a military and security program, as well as more investments. But also we need a consistent security and military cooperation because of the challenges and the threats that are facing.
That was Faisal Kia, the Tunisian ambassador to the U.S. He was speaking with reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Fourteen past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The U.N. Special Envoy for Yemen expressed deep concern today about an escalation of violence in the country. Ismail Ould Sheikh Ahmed also welcomed a pledge by a Saudi-led coalition to allow access to humanitarian aid at a key port. He also condemned Tuesday's Houthi rebel ballistic missile attack on Saudi Arabia, saying it was an escalation that hinders peace efforts in Yemen. The coalition said yesterday that despite the new missile attack, the Houthi-controlled Hodeidah port will remain open for 30 days in order to allow for shipments of food and other relief materials. Humanitarian organizations have repeatedly called attention to the effects of the conflict on civilians in Yemen, where the United Nations says 3 million people have been forced from their homes. Today, the International Red Cross said there are 1 million suspected cases of cholera in Yemen and that more than 80% of Yemenis lack food, fuel, clean water, and access to health care.
A recent United Nations Environment Assembly gathering in Nairobi, Kenya, spotlighted the growing problem plastic trash poses ultimately to the world's oceans and waterways and plastic's impact on the food chain. VOA senior analyst Jeffrey Young spoke with a group of environmental analysts about sub-Saharan Africa's part of the problem and its efforts to address it.
As sub-Saharan Africa grows, both economically and in population, disposing of its refuse, especially plastic items, presents a mounting problem. And it's not only piling up in landfills. Much of it also gets flushed by rivers into bays and then the oceans surrounding the continent. In early December, the United Nations Environment Assembly met in Nairobi, Kenya, to forge an initiative against plastic waste in the oceans. This action was badly overdue, as told to VOA via Skype from South Africa by African Marine Waste Network Director Anthony Ribbink.
One of the biggest problems with the plastic pollution in Africa was that it wasn't recognized for many decades as being a problem, and particularly in the sort of peri-urban areas where there are lots of people, because the population density is incredibly high, the accumulation of waste, all forms of waste, but particularly plastic waste.
The UN Environment Assembly and marine scientists say there are five areas in the world's oceans where there are huge masses of largely plastic trash called gyres, because currents keep the waste in place going in circles. Two of these waste heaps are described via Skype from Durban by the NGO Friends of the Earth South Africa's Niven Reddy.
Just west of where Cape Town is in South Africa, the South Atlantic Gyre, and on the east of Africa as well, near Madagascar and Mauritius, is the Indian Ocean Gyre.
Because it is so widespread and some of it so small, plastics have found their way into many marine animals, and that means it has also become part of the food chain. More on that via Skype from Djibouti, from the Center for International and Environmental Law's David Azoulay.
When fish eat plankton that has eaten plastic particles, these plastic particles end up in our own body, together with all the toxic substances that go into the manufacture of plastic, whether they're flame retardant or plasticizers, and those toxic particles have a direct impact on our endocrine system and on our body and all body systems.
18 African states now have bans or surcharges on plastics. Analysts say that the continent's coastal countries need to get even more restrictive on plastic production and practice better waste management now, before the continent's growth makes the problem even more difficult to address. Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
Traditionally, the Christmas festive season in Zimbabwe has been a time for loved ones to travel and spend time with their families. But this year's events are giving a new twist to the season. Reporter Kudze Zivanvarashi looks into how Christmas will be for Zimbabweans.
This holiday season, Zimbabweans are looking back on an eventful year. From soldiering on in a cash crisis, registering to vote, and ousting the nonagenarian president of 37 years in power. Gift Ostalos is the spokesperson of Tajamuka, a citizen movement pressure group that staged protests during Mugabe's time in power.
In terms of our history and our culture, we celebrate this by connecting with the families, those abroad travel, those who are in the metropolitan provinces, travel to rural areas.
Despite the new political developments in the country, Ostalos thinks Christmas this year is less optimistic.
I think this year's festive season is very hopeless. as reflected by the state of the economy. There's a radical hike of prices and the total collapse of the social and the economic fabric has a huge consequence on the way citizens are going to celebrate.
Thokozani Kupe is vice president of the opposition movement for democratic change. She says this Christmas will be a terrible one for Zimbabweans.
The truth of the matter is that there won't be any difference. Money is not available in banks. People don't have money. And as we heard that, even the president said bonuses are going to be paid, but next year it is one and the same old story. It's just like any other day. For me, I'm not seeing any difference at all, even with this new dispensation.
However, Eddie Cross, an MDC member of parliament representing Bulawayo South, is more upbeat.
I think Zimbabweans are starting to feel that there's movement. And I think they're very cautious, but I think so far, I think the early indications are that 2018 is going to be much better. I think that most Zimbabweans will feel a little bit more confident about the coming year.
Kindness Paradza, a member of the ruling ZANU-PF and the member of parliament for Makonde, he thinks this festive season is looking bright.
This is going to be the best Christmas for Zimbabweans. You know why? We're not going to experience any roadblocks that's like what we've experienced in the past years. And also, I think, as the president said, the prices are going, basic commodities are going to go down. And not only that, I'm sure the banks are going to be able to dispense some money. And also, you are aware that all the civil servants are going to be paid. This is the best Christmas they've ever had in about 17 or so years.
Many Zimbabweans are ending the year with the cautious hope that new government will bring the gifts it's promised: economic growth and jobs. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinawashe from Harare.
A senior UN official says people are dying because the Syrian government will not give the green light for an urgent medical evacuation from eastern Ghouta, a suburb of Damascus. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations has been asking the Syrian government for permission to transport patients from eastern Ghouta to Damascus for urgent medical treatment since May, to no avail. Special advisor to the UN Syrian envoy, Jan Egeland, says 494 people were on the priority list for medical evacuations drawn up 2 months ago.
That number is going down, not because we're evacuating people, but because they are dying.
At least 400,000 people are trapped in eastern Ghouta, which is besieged by President Bashar al-Assad's regime. UN humanitarian workers have been blocked from delivering food and other critical supplies to the civilians trapped there for months. Because of this deprivation, Egeland says 12% of children in the city are suffering from severe acute malnutrition, and one-third of malnourished children under 5 are stunted. He tells VOA he has confirmation that 16 people have died since the medical evacuation lists were resubmitted in November, but he adds that number is probably higher.
I fear during this Christmas and holiday season, there will be more deaths unless we get the evacuation going. They have to be evacuated to get the treatment they need to save their life.
Eastern Ghouta, which has been under siege since 2013, is only 15 kilometers east of Damascus. Egeland notes the Syrian capital has the hospitals needed to care for the wounded and critically ill patients. He says the city has enormous warehouses full of special nutritional therapeutic foods needed to treat acutely malnourished children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The state of North Dakota is one of the leading resettlement locations per capita for refugees coming to the United States. About 400 refugees each year arrive in larger cities like Fargo, where they are gradually reshaping the ethnic and cultural makeup of their adopted hometowns. As VOA's Ken Farbo reports, the transition for refugees in this northern state is not always easy, but some who have overcome adversity are giving hope this holiday season to others around them most in need.
Winter has come to Fargo, North Dakota.
Whoa.
Where 16-year-old Nepali refugee Pooja Chetri.
We have 7 boxes of picto beans.
And 18-year-old South Sudanese refugee Maria Tuya are stocking up for the season.
Same thing.
The food packages they carry could go a long way to feed their families.
Sometimes we don't have like that much to eat, you know. Usually there's like a box of cereal.
It's definitely sometimes a struggle when I open the fridge, you know, there's not much we could, you know, pick from.
But what they lift...
Oh God, so heavy.
Sort...
Peanut butter.
And stack... is not going into their cupboards at home.
If you have more than four people in your family, you can take two of each thing.
This is food they are giving away.
When they're coming through the door and going out, they're so delightful. There's so much gratefulness in their face expression. Just know that they're getting little hopes each day when you're handing these food out.
This pop-up food pantry is in part an answer to Fargo's need, where almost 15% of the population lives below the poverty level. Well, this exercise in giving was conceived and executed by refugee students, including Chetri and Tuya. It is one of the many lessons in life sponsored by the Legacy Children's Foundation, which
is an after-school resource to help at-risk kids, low-income students, receive the resources they need to graduate from high school.
Executive Director Mary Jean Dean says the organization isn't focused solely on refugees, but they are often the ones with the greatest need.
They really are challenged with feeling like they're fitting in. They look different, they talk different, they have a different dialect. They don't always understand exactly what the teacher wants, so there's lots of questions, there's peer pressure.
When you see people in your grade level and you're not there, you're so far behind and you're taking out of class regularly, it just hurts. And yeah.
This place helped you?
Yes, it did. It helped me very much.
Thanks to Legacy's programs, which include English lessons, math tutors, and speech therapy sessions, both Chetri and Tuya...
Should we use these protein bites?
...are among a growing group of success stories.
Honestly, if this program didn't exist, I wouldn't be here. I don't know what would I be doing.
Not only has it helped me with, like, school and, like, you know, education, it's also helped me with, like, leadership skills and, like, confidence.
Skills and confidence which motivate them to pay back Legacy by paying it forward. Not just at the pantry.
Always good to see you.
But also at area homeless shelters, where they bring warm food, warm blankets.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And hope.
When someone is helping you do better, you just want to get back and make someone's life better. Just small kindness can go a long way.
A long way in making North Dakota's long, cold winter nights a little bit warmer for those struggling this holiday season. Thanks to some of its newest and grateful neighbors. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Fargo, North Dakota.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
The Voice of America, VOA.